So I'm here with Renee Molnar. Thank you for being here today. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So you're running to serve in a role that requires a lot of time and attention. The Akron School Board can and will be dealing with a lot of tough issues on a pretty regular basis. So before we dive in, can you just tell us why you're running for office? And as you talk about your motivations to run, just introduce yourself and share your background.
Sure. Thank you. So there are three primary reasons why I want to run. And that is, as an Akronite, I've realized that my personal, professional, and social life is all in Akron. So professionally, I have a Bachelor of Science in Education, Master of Arts in Education, and a PhD in Urban Education with a specialization in education policy. So my entire career is in education. I started off as a classroom teacher. I am now at the University of Akron promoting student learning and success initiatives that utilize technology, and I research in the evolving educational landscape. But that's only one reason why I'm running for office. Another reason I'm running for office is personally, I have three kids in the district, and I'm really proud that my kids go to IB schools, and I have kids in an IB elementary school. That's something that's really special that Akron has. And every morning, my kids repeat their school's vision statement, and it's to be lifelong learners with a global mindset, ready to take action to improve our world. And I realized as a parent, as their role model, I needed to step up and take more action to improve our world. You know, reading is important, but I have more to offer my city and my school district than volunteering for the Scholastic Book Fair. And so when I looked at the makeup of the school board, Dr. Akbar also had a PhD in education policy. And when his seat was vacant, I knew that I needed to apply. And although many of the current candidates for school board applied for that vacancy, I think it was my unique perspective that the board knew would be a valuable addition to the team. And that's why they selected me. And I've been on the board for 5 months now. And it has been a very, very special experience because it has really reminded me that also socially, you know, as you said, this is a very potentially consuming experience, but everything I have done and am as a person and even as a mother is related to the school board. People joke around, I almost always have at least one kid with me, and they go, didn't you get a babysitter? But if my kids are at home, they're going to be on YouTube, they're going to play video games. I know that. But instead, they're coming with me. They're going to the farmer's market by Patterson Bark. They're going to ward meetings with me. They found a new favorite place for pierogies that way. And it has been really, it's made me a better mother to be on the school board and also brought that perspective while I'm out in the community also.
So you have a unique perspective of currently serving on the board, but then also have forward-thinking aspirations to continue serving on the board. What do you view to be the big picture items that the board's going to be engaging with over the next 12 or 18 months?
So over the next 12 to 18 months, I know the hot button items are finances, levy. We also have, in the last 5 months, new treasurer, new superintendent. But what I'm really excited about beyond even the next 18 months, but the next 4 years, because this is a four-year term, and beyond that, we also have a new director of technology. And education technology is something that is really important to me. That's where a lot of my research and experience lie. And I know everyone's really tired of talking about COVID, but one thing that we learned from COVID is that COVID did not change online learning. Online learning and the recommendations for learning online have stayed pretty much the same, but it has changed face-to-face learning. The expectations from students, the expectations from families, the communication, the grading, all of that has changed dramatically now that everyone has had an experience with some of the things that we can do with technology and online. So I think that moving forward with a lot of technology policies. Also, you know, in the last year, we've had access to a lot of free AI opportunities, ChatGPT, Bard, whatever you want to call it. But at yesterday's State of the County address, we heard about the expanded broadband access. And I was listening to NPR the other day, and they were talking about science and snake venom and how they're finding all of these rapid antidotes to snake venom and other things like that by using AI, using ChatGPT and things like that. And it reminded me, we aren't going to run out of problems to solve. We're always going to need human researchers to figure out if the scientific ideas the AI was going to pursue was worthwhile. And so the most successful people in our city, in our country, are going to be the ones most strategically utilizing their resources and tools. And so we're working now. On Monday, we had our first reading of a revised technology policy at Monday's board meeting to allow students to use ChatGPT and other AI tools. And the next step for that also, after hopefully that policy passes, is to familiarize faculty and staff with the tools. You know, it's kind of like email. Once they use it personally and professionally, we'll be able to better teach and monitor students. And I think it will engage students. I was at the community discussion on education a couple weeks ago, and students, teenagers always want to know why. They want to know why they're learning. And this will connect them to future prospects that are going to change every field.
Great. Let's shift gears a little bit and focus on the college and career academies. That's been up and running for about 6 years now. Just your thoughts, perspectives on how it's been benefiting students, how it ties into the broader business community and our just the region's talent pipeline. What have you viewed to be good about those partnerships?
So the college and career academies have allowed pathways for graduation for a lot of students that without this might not have graduated. And when they graduated, they have skills that allowed them to have jobs and careers immediately. So I was at Buchdahl's Masonry event a couple weeks ago, and I spoke with an alumni who came. So first of all, this is an alumni student that wanted to come back to talk to the next students about how great their experience was. So that in itself is a win. But then when I was talking to this gentleman, he explained that he said I started off as a mudslinger, but then he moved up and he explained all the other union jobs he had, and now he's going into welding. And then he described about four types of welding that I honestly did not know existed, but he was so excited. And every single thing that he described to me was a lifelong learner. This is what we're trying to promote. This is what we're trying to have. And, you know, he's a father, he has children, he's in a home. And this is, in my opinion, a great success story all around. So that is one part of the college and career academies. But I do think that even though we are national leaders, people from all over the country come to the Knight Center here to see what we're doing, how we're doing it, so they can bring it back to their states. I still think there's always room for improvements. I think one of the things that was mentioned to me is maybe having a breakout session at the next conference just about the internships and strengthening those relationships of the internships and what the students are doing and how they're doing it. I also know that it might be an interesting discussion to examine the policy that gives students more opportunities. At last Monday's board meeting, there was a masonry project at the school where our masonry program is, and that masonry project did not go to those students. And so there was a question, what is our process for having our students do some of these projects? Because some of the alumni at that same school were very proud to have laid the bricks that were still there at the school. They could, you know, visit those bricks. And when it comes down to it, I understand that we have to do bids and we have to be fiscally responsible, but we're in the business of educating children, and that should be our number one priority. I really think that we looked at when the college and careers were originally formulated, they looked at projections of what might be in-demand careers that would pay a living wage here in Akron. So students can see a thriving vision for themselves here in Akron. But those projections now are a decade old. So is it possible that we might want to reevaluate and look at what some of the programs are? And I know that there's been a lot of ask for more entrepreneurship and C-suite jobs and experiences for our students.
That's great. So it sounds like long-term, maybe building upon the partnerships that exist, taking stock of, you know, what educational assets we have, reevaluate their direction. How would you, as a member of the school board from a policy perspective, help ensure that all students have an equitable educational experience?
From a policy perspective, I am really proud of our district's equity policy, and anyone can actually visit that. I don't have it written down here, but on our district's website, and the vision of the district is by having equity infused into everything that the district is moving forward on. I do really appreciate the work that has been done already, especially regarding student voice. I think asking our students and asking their families, what do you need? And then responding to that, not just asking them, but actually taking action based on what they're saying that they need, is the most important thing that we can do.
Earlier in our talk, you touched on the city's finances. Mm-hmm. Recently, the state expanded its state voucher program, which can, in all likelihood, will create pressures on student enrollment. How can the board help APS be more competitive in, you know, retaining its talent base, retaining its students, and what could the board be thinking about differently related to those challenges?
I think our district has a lot of really great programs. The problem is I don't think very many people know about them. We have not done a very good job of telling our story and having our narrative, which would increase enrollment and also would encourage students to come to school more. Because the way that the schools are funded isn't just based on how many students are enrolled, but also how many hours the students that are enrolled attend school. So even if you have a lot of students enrolled, but you have a high absentee rate or a half-day student, we are losing money there also. So I think that creating a nurturing environment where students want to be and advertising better the programs we have to families to say, you will have a thriving future in Akron if you go through our programs, I think that will increase enrollment. And it's kind of reminding me of our most recent debate when we were at the library. I was reflecting on that, and I read the article in the Beacon because they asked us all, how are we prepared to, or what made us feel like we were prepared to teach in an urban environment? And I was a little disheartened when reading so many of the responses. People talked about their struggles. And the question wasn't about your struggles. The question was about an urban district. And I don't think that the concept of urban, should always be met with a deficit mindset. And I think when we have that approach, or if people have that approach, it limits our potential instead of embracing our strengths. And the students see that. The students feel that. And we don't want to put that on them. And I think that in telling our story, also, there's a missed opportunity with our universities. You know, I did the Northeast Ohio tour. I've been to three of our local universities, but I'm at the University of Akron now, but we have partnerships with Kent State. You know, Cleveland State is close by, and even Ohio State, Cincinnati, those can kind of be our neighbors. There are people in those areas with similar challenges to us, and if we tell our story, if we publish research, we have more data than we know what to do with. And we can build upon our findings. We can enable a deeper understanding of the problems, because Akron is not alone. And if we're going to solve these, and if we're going to highlight what we're doing well, then we need to build a team.
Great. We touched a little bit on the board's role and how you think it should operate, but just going a little bit deeper, generally speaking, how do you think the board should operate on a day-to-day basis on behalf of the district? And then really a follow-up, a second piece to that would be, when it comes to disagreements, how do you see working through that, not just among other board members, but community stakeholders? Again, these are tough issues that you guys are going to have to work through, and there's lots of varying perspectives.
Yes. So first, board members are elected community representatives. That's why we're having podcasts and debates. Our district already has a treasurer, a superintendent, people in charge of business operations and teaching and learning. The school board does not replace any of those people. All of those people present to us, and it's our jobs at the committee meetings really to be their student while they explain what they think is needed for the district and then represent our community by asking questions. We need to come to committee meetings prepared. We need to do our homework and have questions that come to us maybe via email or while we talk to people at events, because we need to be able to voice concerns that they might have or we might think might be in the community, because those are the people that elected us. And so between the meetings, we need to be in schools. Between the meetings, we need to be at events, because if you don't have all of that background information, then you don't have any of those valuable experiences to bring to those committee meetings.
And so that's the board generally as a unit. If you're elected, or as you were appointed, if you're elected, you'll be an individual member of that 7-person board. So as an individual, where do you see you spending the majority amount of your time and focus? Where do you want to make most impact?
Yeah. I also want to respond to part of the other question you had before, is how do you handle disagreements? Because what I think is interesting is we each are only one of 7. And what has been most interesting to me in the debates that we've had so far, we've had two, there's one more next week, is there's actually been very little debate. And as my time as a board member so far, we have agreed on most things, mostly. You know, there, I don't see anyone currently on the board, and I don't see anyone from what I've seen from the people who are the candidates for the board, I don't see anyone who wants to come in with an incredibly divisive or controversial attitude. And that can make it really hard for voters then to decide who to pick. You know, we're having a debate, but instead of disagreeing with each other, we're all just building on each other's answers. So I think what's really important then is to think, who's going to do the work? Who's going to do their homework? Who's going to come to those committee meetings with the questions ready? Who is going to do the in-between work and go to all of the community events needed so you have perspective? Who's going to build relationships with families, parents, other community members, and bring that with them? I feel like I have tried to do that in the last 5 months. I know in the community reflections part of each of our board members, some of them have gone a little long. I'm starting to pick and choose now. But I will continue to do that if I'm elected.
That's great. And we've already discussed the financial aspect of the board's responsibilities a couple times, but recently the board decided to wait until November of 24, it seems, to go back to the community for additional support. Just please expand upon your thoughts, perspectives on the financial challenges, the financial landscape the district is facing, and again, from your perspective, how you think the board can most effectively garner the necessary support it needs from the community.
Yeah, so the biggest problem that we have financially is due to state policy. We are in a system that has been deemed unconstitutional for over 20 years, and we survive, and not just Akron, but every district in Ohio survives from levy to levy. And the levy that we are surviving on now is 12 years old. And so I know that if I had the exact same money in my bank account as I did 12 years ago, I'd be a much sadder person today. the price of things go up. It's not just, you know, we need a raise because we're doing more, but that's just what inflation is. And so we will need to go for a levy. And after we go through that levy, we will need to immediately start discussing when we will go to the next levy. And when that levy passes, every district that is fiscally responsible is going to plan from levy to levy. Because if you don't start planning immediately, then you're going to get to the point where you realize, oh no, we might run out of money soon. We should start talking about a levy. And then you try to gather community support and you're behind the window of when you actually need it. So while you're doing all that, hopefully we are meeting with other districts. You know, we're going to national, there are national school board member conferences. There are state school board member conferences. There are opportunities for active and engaged school board members to meet with other people who are going through similar things in their states, in their districts, in their communities, and coming together to try to fix and revise the policies. That's the only long-term solution, because in between then, it's just levy to levy.
Well, again, thank you for taking some time this morning to meet with us and answer questions. Before we wrap up, any final thoughts, closing remarks?
Wow, so much to say.
And if not, we can always just wrap it up there.
I guess the only thing that comes to mind is I started my career as a middle school math teacher. So for any other algebra nerd out there like me, there are 8 candidates and 3 seats, so there's over 300 permutations of how this election could run out, 56 combinations of how we're going to fill up the seats. But hopefully I fulfill all the qualifications to earn everyone's vote. Please check out my website. It's my name, ReneeMolnar.com. I also have a Facebook page, Renee for Akron School Board, and you can get to my website that way, too.
Great. We'll provide those links in the resources we push out. And thanks again. Best of luck with the remainder of your campaign.